The reason cold calls don't work anymore is because the starting point for trustworthiness is zero. We don't know anything about the person that we're about to buy from or to hire to do a service. Beyond that, our trustfulness is at zero because of all the spam and scam calls that we get. And zero times zero is, well, zero. So we start with zero trust. The only way to differentiate yourself and get business is by being trusted. People buy from people they trust. They are even willing to pay a premium. And that's what I found in my Trust Premium research. So how do we start with trustworthiness that is higher than zero? Well, there are two ways to do that. One is to have the customer do the research, but we don't control the customer. The other way is to have referrals or introduction or transferable trust. That's what the topic of this episode is about. My guest today is Bill Cates, CSP, CPAE. Bill is the author of three books, Get More Referrals Now, Beyond Referrals, and Radical Relevance. He just released a new book, which we'll talk about today. Bill is the host of the Top Advisor podcast, currently ranked in the top 5% of podcasts globally. Bill's focus is on financial advisors and the financial industry, and we'll talk more about that as well. Thousands of professionals are using Bill's system to create a flow of high-quality clients through referrals and through personal introductions. We will learn more about that and have a conversation about referrals and transferable trust right up to this. Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Yoram Solomon, your host, the author of The Book of Trust, and facilitator of the Trust Habits Workshop. My mission is simple. I want to help you form habits that build your trustworthiness, because the answer to this question will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? So once again, this is our guest today, Bill Cates, CSP, CPAE, the author of three books, Get More Referrals Now. I think this one I have, Beyond Referrals and Radical Relevance, host of the Top Advisor podcast, which currently ranked at the top 5% of podcasts worldwide. Now, I'll jump straight into, there's something in your bio that's kind of interesting, Bill. First of all, thank you for being here.
Great to be here. You know, it was you, Yoram, that made me realize how high my podcast is ranked. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So you trekked, I mean, this is what your bio says. You trekked through the Himalayas of Nepal, lived on a houseboat in Kashmir in India. You reached the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. You cycled through Vietnam and you camped in the Arctic Circle. So you crazy?
Yeah. Well, I'm also used to be a drummer in a rock and roll band. So that pulls it full circle, right?
I would start with that.
Well, when I do my live presentations in front of a group, if my microphone's on, they'll say, Bill did. He also toured the country as a drummer in a rock and roll band. I'll go, get ready. I've done some adventure travel. I love it. I would continue to do it, but most of my friends think they're too old to do it. They just want to go play golf, which I like to do too. It's a different kind of adventure. We were planning a trip to Patagonia. My buddies wanted to play golf in Patagonia. Nah, not going there to play golf. So we're working on the next adventure.
Yeah. By the way, are you left-handed or right-handed?
I am right-handed.
Okay. I'll tell you why I ask. Since I didn't know you're a drummer, you don't know that I am. And I'm left-handed, so I had to actually reorganize how the drums are set. So I have the snare on the right side and the toms going to the left.
Well, you know, Ringo.
But we digress.
Well, you know, Ringo's a left-handed drummer, but he kept it as a regular kit. And that's why in all his fills, there's always a little lag in Ringo's drum fills. And it's because of moving differently on the drum set because he's a lefty.
The hands cross each other.
Yeah. So let's talk about drums or we can talk about referrals. Up to you.
Or let's do referrals. You're right. That should be the topic. And, you know, we met actually at an NSA. You know, every time I talk about the NSA, I have to say it's the National Speakers Association, but I really, really like to leave it as we're both in NSA and just we'll leave it at that.
We just can't tell you about it. So
we met there. You came to our chapter in Texas. You talked about referrals. And just to kind of set it up, how that feeds into my trust premium, people are willing to pay more. People are willing to select you if they trust you. Now, they trust you based on who you are and what you do when you interact with them. The who you are is based on research they have done, if they were the ones proactive to do research, or based on what I call transferable trust that you called borrows trust. Borrowed trust. Right. So you're known as the referral coach, which is a big part of borrowed trust or transferable trust. But you're very unique in that field. I don't know anybody else that focuses on referrals as much as you do. What made you focus on referrals?
Yeah, there's a few folks out there that come and go. I'm the one that kind of stays. in fact, in my LinkedIn profile now, I call myself the original referral coach because I've been at it for 30 years. The rest have either died off or moved on to another business. What made me focus on this? Well, long time ago, I was speaking, writing, and it was all around prospecting. So I've always liked the hunt, the prospect, determining who should we reach out to and what's the message going to be. But I was looking to specialize a little bit more, and I was listening to some audio tapes, and some of those listening will remember when we actually had audio tapes. This guy was talking about referrals, and I'm thinking, well, that's great, but I would say it this way, and I do it this way. And so within about a month's time, I decided I'm going to write my first book on that. And my first book, Unlimited Referrals, came out in 1996. And I've hardly looked back in terms of my focus. And it's one of those things that, you know, I was kind of meant to be kind of thing. I just seem to have a knack for this process and how it works and how we leverage the borrowed or transferable trust and have, you know, built a pretty successful business on that.
Yeah. I mean, I would say very successful because everybody knows you as the referral coach. And you just came out, you just released a new book. The title of the book is The Language of Referrals. The subtitle is The Words and Scripts Financial Professionals, and we'll get back to financial professionals, need use to gain more ideal clients. So tell us a little bit about what's special about this book. What have you learned since you published the previous books?
Yeah, so here's what I know. A lot of things I know and don't know, but a lot of people are reluctant to ask for referrals, introductions. They lack the confidence. And a lot of that comes from not knowing exactly what to say. In other words, how do I do it without begging, without pushing? When I have people come to me for coaching or other things, they want to know, how do I do this without looking like the creepy referral guy? And so I've learned that people like to be fed the words to say. Now, I'm not expecting anyone to necessarily memorize these. I call them scripts and word tracks. Some may, and if you like the words I use, great, use them. But in most cases, it's going to trigger. And so here's what I found is a strategy such as asking for introductions to others. That's a strategy. If people are having reluctance to that, then sometimes seeing how it plays out tactically, which is what this book is about, it's very tactical. It's exactly what to do, what to say. Then when they say, oh, I didn't realize I could say it that way, or I never thought about saying it that way or approaching it that way, then all of a sudden, the strategy becomes available to them and they can see themselves and feel themselves doing it. So that's the book. The book is this is exactly how you do it and what you should say. And then therefore, the strategy will become more accessible to folks. And ultimately, it's about confidence. Right, none of this is rocket science. It's not hard to understand. It's just confidence. And people say I seem to have a knack for the verbiage around it, so I'm going with that.
No, I think that sometimes the words, the tone of voice, are very important in how you ask for it. You know, one, I'm generally I'm against cold calling, but if you have to make a cold call, there's this one little thing that people just don't realize how important it is in the success of even a cold call. And that is to start with a question, is this a good time for you? And so I get it. People really sometimes need to know what words really do work and what don't. You know, what I call transferable trust, you call borrowed trust. I know what it means to me. What does it mean to you? Where do you see that fitting?
Yeah, essentially, what's happening is you're borrowing the trust that exists between the referral source, the introducer, and the prospective client or the prospect, right? So the higher the level of trust and credibility between those two people, the more effective, the more power, if you will, that borrowed trust or transferable trust will have. If there's a lot of respect there, and credibility is important too. So in the financial services world, for instance, I may respect someone, I may like someone, I may trust someone, but when it comes to finances and their decisions they've made, if that's not credible to me, then that's that piece of trust that isn't transferable, or it's not being borrowed, if you will. So it's got to hit in the right elements. But nonetheless, what happens is you borrow the trust. You know, Laura says, talk to George. And so I say, hey, George, you know, Laura recommended we talk. And, oh, I like Laura. I trust Laura, right, unconsciously. She told me this about you, and I've learned this about you. And so what I'm doing is I'm leaning on that trust just long enough to earn my own trust. And sometimes the borrowed trust, the transferable trust, is enough to go all the way, right? If Laura did it, that's good enough for me. And sometimes it's just enough to get our foot in the door, and we got to really work on making sure we're increasing that credibility and trust. And I'll tell you, one way to do that is to talk to your referral source, whoever's making the introduction, and say, what's going on in his life, her life, their life that's important to them right now? Or if it's a B2B situation, what's going on in his or her business that's really on their radar right now? Because we're trying to make this introduction relevant. It's got to be, we're borrowing the trust. That gets them to maybe look at the email and open it. But if the message that our introducer conveys or that we follow up with isn't relevant to them, then the trust is starting to wane, or we're not building increasing the level of trust. Let's put it that way.
Yep. And do you like math, by the way?
No, not really. I know you do. Your math confuses me most of the time, but yes, go for yes. it. What do you have in mind?
I'm not putting the math formulas behind me. But to me, the what you said in a very qualitative way, if I turn it into quantitative, the level of trust that this customer that never met you has in you is the product of the trust that they have in me and the trust that I have in you. So if you think about it, if everything is between 0 and 1, if the customer trusts me 100% and I trust you 100%, they will probably trust you 100%, because I tell them, it's not just that you trust me, but I trust Bill. And when they see that I trust you 100%, they're going to go, well, I don't need to check anymore. Sometimes, you know how you get requests for referrals? I know that I do. Someone I've never, can you recommend me to speak in that event? And I tell them, I never saw you speak. I mean, what do you want me to say? And one thing that I think we need to consider is the person providing the referral itself, how comfortable are they in making that recommendation? Because they're putting their own reputation on the line. Can you say something about
that? Yeah, it's all about being referable. You have to be referable. If you're not referable, in this case, with the example you were giving, I've never seen you speak. I don't know what you speak about, or I know what you speak about, but I don't know how good you are. And I don't know how you work with clients. You know, are you arrogant? Are you easy to work with? I don't know. And so you're not referable yet. And so we have to become referable in the eyes of whomever we're asking for an introduction. And now if it's a client, and client has experienced our work and they see firsthand, then they see the value, then odds are we are referable. If it's a center of influence, if it's someone who hasn't actually experienced our work, just knows about our work, then that's usually a little bit more effort, a little more knowingness on their part to feel good about what we do and how we do it. So for instance, financial advisors like to get referrals from accountants and attorneys. All right. They send referrals to that accountant or that attorney and nothing comes back. And they're wondering, you know, what's wrong with this person? I sent him a couple of referrals. Well, first of all, they were born without the reciprocity gene. So just because you send an accountant or an attorney doesn't mean they're going to do it. And it doesn't make you referable. It helps a little, but if they still don't know who you are, what you do, and how well you do it, and how you're going to treat their clients, you're still not referable, because their biggest fear is that somehow you're going to mess up their relationship. You're going to break that trust in that relationship. So you got to be referable. Otherwise, it's not happening.
Yeah. And you actually touched on, over the years, I observed the 8 laws of trust. I didn't make them up. I observed them. And one of them, number 4, is that trust is asymmetrical. And you just touched on that. The fact that I trust you does not mean that you trust me. So referrals don't necessarily work in complete reciprocity. I may refer you because I saw you speak, but you haven't seen me speak. You may not feel comfortable referring me. Yeah. You used the word introduction in your answer before, and I know that you make a distinction between referrals and introductions. Is there a difference? What is it?
Yes, there is a difference in my mind. So sometimes they call it the referred lead, and it goes like this, you know.
They call it what?
A referred lead.
Referred lead.
So I'd say, Laura, call George. Use my name. All right, so Laura, the advisor, calls George and uses Bill, and George is thinking, why did Bill give my name out to this person? Who is this person? I don't know who this person is. What am I supposed to do with this, right? So that just doesn't work like it used to work. People don't answer their phone. People are a little more skeptical about this sort of thing. So, because they're busy and who knows what else. So to me, the conversation around referrals isn't done until we've arranged for, negotiated, talked about an introduction, a connection. And so since we need a connection, we need to get introduced. And we can talk about that. There's a lot of different ways to get introduced. But since we need that, the conversation is not done until that's been arranged. We should use the word that represents what we really want. We don't want a referral where word of mouth where, I'll tell some folks about you. Yeah, it's better than nothing, and occasionally lightning strikes, but most of the time it doesn't. We want a connection. We want it. So use the word that represents what you want. So you and I will use the word referrals, kind of in background conversation. But if I'm talking to you about an introduction to someone, I'm going to use the word introduction, and I'm going to work on making sure I get the best possible introduction.
So what is the alternative to? I get that. I may ask someone to introduce me to someone else, but is there something else? Is there something else in using that name?
Well, yeah. So for instance, I might say to you, how do you feel about introducing me to your sister and brother-in-law? You'll say, well, okay, but you don't really know what that means exactly. I say, you're assuming you come up with an approach that feels comfortable for you, for them. Would you be open to possibly introducing me to your sister and brother-in-law? Oh yeah, I guess so. What do you have in mind? So you want to just immediately let people know as often and best you can that it's going to be comfortable. We're going to be careful about this. And I'll say, well, I have a way that works best. What if you sent an email to them and put me on that email and say, Martha, George, meet Bill. I know your sister's name probably isn't Martha, but anyway, I'm making this up as we go, right?
It's Ronit.
Okay, right. So Ronit, meet Bill. Remember we've been talking about retiring without, compromising on our lifestyle. Bill's helping me with that now, right? There's a reason why I'm making this introduction. So I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to quote unquote negotiate, discuss, figure out what is the best way for you to introduce me to your sister and brother-in-law in a way that feels comfortable for you and comfortable for them. And if we're lucky, piques their interest in hearing from me. That's the relevance part. We want to make sure that at least piques their interest in hearing from me. And maybe we'll set up a quick Zoom or something to get the conversation started.
So one thing that, and again, I get a lot of referral requests, you know this person, Bill Gates, and of course they really mean Bill Gates and they just misspell it and we get to you, but you know this person, can you make an introduction? Where does the part of I want to ask Bill first if he's okay with that introduction, where does that play a role?
Yeah, it can play a role for sure. And it depends on the individuals quite a bit. And it depends a little bit on what the introductions. I hate to give you the it depends answer. And it does. So, for instance, I get the same thing. And sometimes I'm going to want to talk to that recipient of the introduction, the prospect, if you will, to see, you know, are they interested in meeting this person? Is that something they're open to before I do it? Because I don't want to put them in an awkward position where they feel, because of the trust in our relationships, right, where they have to respond out of obligation to me. I want them to respond out of interest in the topic. So yeah, sometimes I will, but not always. It depends on what the topic is and whether I think it's okay. Now, when it comes to the world of financial advisors, and I know not everyone's listening as a financial advisor, but because we're talking about personal financial matters, things get a little bit more private, a little more, you know, we got to be a little more careful around this. And I like an email introduction. I like the, George, meet Bill. Here's why I'm introducing you. Then Bill follows up with an email. So this way, the prospect hears from their friend first, but we don't have to wait for their friend to have a big, long conversation with that prospect. But sometimes they're going to want to have that conversation. They're going to say, look, I appreciate this, and I really do want to talk to him first. All right, fine. Yeah. So the key here is rather than say, okay, good, let me know what he says, say, well, can we chat about that a little bit? I'm curious, what might you say to him? How do you think he'll react? What's going on in his life that's important to him right now that we might match up with the work that we're doing here? So again, I'm trying to get that potential introducer to think through it a little bit and be a little more prepared and give them a little chance of more success. Because if they just say, hey, I'm working with this financial advisor, he's great, you know, you want to meet him, it's just not enough usually, right? There's got to be a little more meat on that bone.
And, you know, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're talking more about the quality of their referral rather than the quantity. So you're not a big proponent of just shoot that email to everybody you know and have them ask them for referrals. You're more focused on who you're asking and who you're asking them to refer you to.
Yes, without question, I'm focused on quality over quantity, not to discount the fact that quantity can be important depending on where you are in your business. When someone's newer in their business, they need a little more quantity. And so maybe ask a little sooner, maybe ask a little more and all, but you still want to personalize. You don't want to do any kind of blast. So I'll tell you, the worst way to ask for introductions is through an email. Right. I don't want to say, Yoram, are you okay introducing me to George Jones? Unless I know you really well.
Yeah.
And I know you know George really well. If I know you really, really well, then that might be okay. But I still don't want you to introduce me to George until you and I have talked about it. So I say, could I interest you in introducing me to George? And if so, can we chat about it for a couple minutes to make sure we position it in the right way? So if I'm sending an email, I'm just trying to gain permission to talk to you about that introduction, because I don't want you just going off and introducing in a way that may not be very effective. I've learned to be very careful about this. I've had people, I've brought it up, the possibility of introducing me to someone, and I want to talk to them first. I don't even say, let's chat about it first. But they haul off and introduce me. They don't do it in an effective way. The other person says, nah, I'm not interested. And it kind of dies, at least for a while. So, yeah, we can ask with an email, but only asking for an email to then talk about it Also, one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to broadcast an introduction to a lot of people. So in other words, you don't want to just take this list of 30 people that you know, and whether you blind CC them or not, and say, hey, I'm working with this guy. He's great. Working with this gal. She's great. You know, if you need someone to help you in this area, talk to her, talk to him. It just doesn't work. Again, lightning strikes occasionally, and I guess maybe, but in most cases it's this is a relationship thing. This is a personal thing. We want to leverage the borrowed trust. We want to leverage the trust back to your main expertise. And if we don't pay attention to that, then and the further we get from that, then the weaker the introduction becomes.
Yeah. And you make a great point. Part of my model, my relative trust model, is the component of intimacy. And intimacy varies from text messages, email messages, all the way to in-person. And in-person builds trust or accelerates building trust a lot faster than email. So you are focusing on quality and not quantity, not to mention that if you focused on quantity, you're going to have to use math. And we know that you don't like math.
Well, can I give you some math? You want some math? I'll give you some math.
You talking to me?
So I always think in terms of multiplication when it comes to referrals and introductions. We create exponential growth in our business by thinking about multiplying our best clients, right? And when we use the referral / introduction process properly, one can lead to two, and two can lead to four, and four can lead to eight, et cetera. You can grow your business exponentially. It's not the same as buying another business, and that creates exponential growth too, but it's certainly faster than a lot of other methodologies. And so that there's some math for you right there. It's exponential growth, multiplying your best clients. And what happens, I've seen two, in fact, I just saw another one the other day, that says that someone who's come into your business through an introduction is, one study said, 2.5 times more likely to provide an introduction. The other one said 4 times more likely, there's some math for you, to introduce you. So what happens is the more you do this, the snowball is rolling down the hill and it's creating that momentum and gathering. And eventually it can actually take on a life of its own, where you don't have to be quite as proactive because everybody you're serving was brought to you that way and they're more predisposed to do it. Doesn't mean they're going to, but they're certainly more predisposed to do it. And everything gets easier over time.
Yeah. You know, that first time that we met in person, I mean, we interacted before that, but the first time we met in person when you came here to Texas, I was pretty preoccupied that day. There were a lot of things happening. I remember that at some point you talked about focus, market focus, and you said, for me, I focus on financial advisors. And I think to me, that was the moment where I went, whoop, he said financial advisors. And the reason was because I had just started a couple of weeks earlier, I had just started launching my major trust premium survey. And the first group was actually financial advisors. Right. What I found was that customers are willing to pay, first of all, are willing to select one financial advisor over another one if the fees are the same 96.6% of the time. The other one only gets 3.4% of the time. But not only that, they're willing to pay 39.4% higher fees to a financial advisor that they trust over one that they don't. Sure. So when I heard you speak about financial advisors, I had to ask, and I didn't ask back then, so I'll ask now, what made you decide that that's your focus industry? And it's not the only industry you work with, but I know that it's a focus for
you. Yeah, it is a focus. It's the main industry, and I do work with others from time to time. Last summer, I spoke to a group of people who sell insulation. As long as I feel like my message is on target and, you know, that I'll do a good job, then I'm willing to entertain. But what made me focus? Well, first of all, when my book came out in 96, I saw how the message resonated with financial advisors. And that's kind of a test with marketing, is that you want to, kind of a law, a rule, if you will, a tenet of marketing, is make sure that the solution, the service, the product is something that truly resonates with other people and that they know they have that issue, right? I don't want to have to educate them on needing referrals. They already know they need referrals, introductions. I'm just going to show them that I'm the guy and to try my methodologies. So it resonated with them. And they're also pretty good at giving and making introductions. So a lot of them started introducing me to other groups, and it just became pretty obvious within a couple of months, maybe a little longer, I go, this is my target market. This is my tribe. These are the people. What also happened along the way, Yoram, is that I also see how important their work is and that everyone needs to have their financial house in order. Everyone deserves financial dignity. Everyone deserves to build wealth, whatever building wealth means to them. And so I know that by helping financial professionals reach more people with the important work they do, I'm helping a huge group of folks. In fact, my next book that'll be out in about a year is, or maybe less, is going to be all around the beliefs and the mistaken thinking and the unproductive emotions that people feel around money. And because I've seen that in working with financial advisors and doing my own work, of course. So that, I don't know, that's a long answer, but that's, you want to go to a market where they appreciate your message, where they know they have the problem, they want to fix the problem, they're willing to pay a little money to fix the problem. And there are, Yoram, some people that are so afraid of asking for referrals or introductions that it's not a problem they're willing to try to fix. And so they get enamored with other things that don't usually work as well, but they work well enough so they can do okay. But you know, how does someone prefer to meet you? An introduction from someone they trust, right? Borrowed trust, yeah. Transferable trust. It's the way of the world. And I think we should build a business based on how people want to meet us.
Yeah. And you know, I think that another thing that really works well is if you think about it, used car salesman, would you trust a referral from one used car salesman to another used car salesman? I don't know, because as a group, you don't have a very high level of trust in them. Which, by the way, there are exceptions. Like, for example, the dealer that I used to buy BMWs. I loved BMWs until one day I decided Jeep Wrangler and that's it. But there was a used car salesman in a BMW dealership that I would trust always, and I would always go and buy from them. I think the fact that, you know, what I found compliments, what you know, is that that premium was so high for trust in with financial advisors. I mean, for example, for insurance agents, I found that their customers are willing to pay 5.5% higher insurance premium, policy premium, 5.5%. Now, this is significant, but it's not 39.4% higher fees that they're willing to pay financial advisors. So it's definitely a market, a good market, but I think there's another element here that relates to referability. Financial advisors talk to financial advisors. Financial advisors get to know financial advisors. Financial advisors get to trust financial advisors. It's a lot easier probably to be referred from one to the other if you're within the same industry.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, without question. It's people they know, people they trust. I was just actually talking to a financial advisor right before this conversation with you, and he was thinking he wanted to focus on physicians. And we had a long conversation around it, and he was making some mistakes in his thinking around how to do that. But there is one thing that he said that relates to what you just said. There's a point to the story, I can guarantee you. and that is he wanted to become an insider, right? He wanted to be an insider in this realm of physicians without being a physician. And yeah. There's a way to do it. And I had to talk him through that and make sure he was making the right decisions. But that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about being the insider, we tend to trust people who are like us. We tend to trust people that we have something in common. There's a story, Malcolm Gladwell, in one of his books. I think it's The Tipping Point. I'm not sure which book it is, but He talks about a family. They're in France and they're looking for a restaurant. They talk to some French folks and they say, "Oh, you should go to Chez Dada, you know." And they go, "Oh, okay." Then they're from Michigan and they find another family from Michigan. They go, "Where's a good place to eat? Oh, we like that. Oh, we're going to go there." Right? Even though the French people tell them the best place to go, they have something in common with the people from Michigan, and so they're going to trust that recommendation. So that similarity, it's a huge factor, and we should pay attention to that. And the more similar, or the more we talk about our value in a way that resonates with the other person, they feel that, they see that, and that engenders trust just enough to keep the conversation going.
You know, it's funny. It's as if I ask you to say this because one other component in my relative trust model, first of all, we're all different. And the same behavior that would cause one person to trust you could cause another person to distrust you. Same behavior. One of the major components is what I call personality compatibility. And one of the big parts in that component is shared values. The fact that we share values, had what I found in my research, you can cover your ears because it's going to have a mathematical number there, but or statistics, which is even worse than math, 86% correlation. 86% correlation between the fact that I believe we share values, we have similar backgrounds, some similarities, and the level of trust that I have in you.
Yeah. I'm without question. I mean, that's the way it works. We all gravitate to people that are somewhat like us. Some form or another.
In your book, you talk about promoting introductions and asking for introductions, and you distinguish between the two. Can you demonstrate something through the language in that book?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So promoting, encouraging is another word. One thing I've been teaching for a long time is the title of one of my books. I didn't invent the phrase, but don't keep me a secret. Don't keep the work I do a secret. If someone says, "Hey, this is great, appreciate what you do," great. Don't keep it a secret. "Hey, Yoram, I just want to let you know I'm never too busy to see if I can be a resource for other people you care about." There are a lot of different ways to promote and encourage introductions and referrals, a lot of different ways. Those are a couple real quick, obvious ways. That's not the same as asking. Asking is, "Yoram, I was hoping we could put our heads together a little bit and see if we could identify a few folks that you think should at least be aware of the work I do. I actually have a couple ideas I'd like to run by you, people you mentioned in previous meetings. Can I run them by you? Just see what you think." Right. So coming with specific, I could say, "Yoram, you know, I know, you know, Bob Jones," right? I'm using all these generic names. Assuming we come up with
David Johnson.
Thank you. Assume we come up with an approach that makes sense, you know, feels comfortable, would you be open to it? It's different. You're asking for specific introductions to specific people or categories of people versus promoting the idea or encouraging the idea. They both have their place. Encouraging, promoting can work. It can produce some results. What it often does is it foreshadows the possible ask. And so that when you do ask, it's not the first time it's come up in conversation. And so it's just, it feels a little more normal, a little more natural. It's not a harsh interjection of a topic that hasn't been brought up before in some form.
Yeah. You know, in the book, the recent book, The Language of Referrals, you provided a formula of how advisors can talk to their clients who are reluctant to discuss introductions. Can you share the formula real quick?
Yeah. So sometimes I call it objections. Sometimes they're not really outright objections. It's concerns. It's some reluctance. All right. So let's call it referral reluctance. So, and this formula, by the way, really works with just about anybody in your life who isn't doing something you would kind of like them to do. It could be a spouse, could be a child, except for teenagers. There's nothing that good, you know, with teenagers, there's nothing a good solid reasoning won't aggravate further. but with everyone else in your life, so the first two steps kind of fall on the heels of each other, like very quick. So it's acknowledgement and then exploration. So if you say, "You know, I don't give referrals. I don't like to do this thing." Say, "You know, that's fine. I know some people don't. Can you tell me more? Have you had a bad experience?" The goal here is to understand the concern, objection, reluctance, whatever word you put to it, right? Because until you listen, until you understand a little bit further, you have not yet earned the right to share your perspective, which may be different from theirs. And it's going to feel harsh to them if you go, yeah, but if it wasn't for George introducing us, we wouldn't be doing it. Well, that may be right, but that's not going to help you, right? So first thing we do is listen. We listen to understand. We may have a way to reverse or shift their thinking. I call it reframe their thinking. And if we do, great. If we get a second objection, a second piece of resistance, they repeat the same, you know, piece of resistance, then it's time to back off. But we back off planting the seed, promoting. We back off with grace and professionalism. We don't say, okay, never mind, and walk away with our tail between our legs. Right? We say, you know, that's fine. I just want you to know that I'm never too busy to see if I can be a resource for other people you care about. Fair enough. And you'll go, yeah, fair enough. And then we're done. And no harm, no foul. I've never seen anybody ever lose a client using this methodology. It doesn't happen. Some people will do it. Some people do it when you ask. Some people do it later. Well, I can't tell you how many times, remember, I've had folks say, yeah, I asked, and they weren't ready. But 2 weeks later, they say, hey, I got somebody for you. So the worst thing it does is it promotes or plants the seed. So, yeah.
So what's left in the process? Getting introduced, right?
Yeah.
How about the sample?
How about what?
A sample of the language of introduction.
Well, yeah. So there's different ways to do it. In the book, I give different samples, different ways, because I want the right way to resonate with you. But I may say something as simple as, let's talk about how you introduced me to your sister and brother-in-law. Let's come up with an approach that feels comfortable. And then I like to have a way that works the best for me. Right. So then I might say, and this is great verbiage, by the way, I've learned over the years, here's what I found works the best. And you go, oh, okay. Everybody wants to know what works the best, right? And in my case, it may be that email handshake, that email introduction. And I need to be prepared if that doesn't fit you, like if you want to talk to them first or you don't want to do an email. So I have my favorite way. Now, the best way to get introduced is in person. Right, you mentioned that a little bit.
Right.
The only thing I have to be careful about is letting the enthusiasm for the introduction to wane if the logistics of making that personal introduction just takes too much time to get them on the golf course or break bread together or whatever it may be. Right. Now, kind of a hybrid now that a lot of folks are doing. If you have a client who really is very willing to introduce you, and their friend, family member, colleague has some interest in meeting you, a three-way Zoom is a great way to get introduced. It's not quite the same as in person, but it's better than just an email introduction, right? It's a little more personal. So that's a little hybrid between the in-person. And the key here, really the most important thing here, Yoram, is to let this person, if I'm asking you for an introduction, to let you know that we need to arrange for the connection. We need to attend to how you're going to connect me with this person. Because if we don't, then and I just leave you up to your own device, you may not do a particularly good job. You may not get to it all. You may have second thoughts. But if we talk about it and you feel comfortable with that and we think through it just a little bit, more likely it's going to happen and it's going to be more effective because of that.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, I do want to give a few details and how to reach you and so on. But before we get there, is there anything else that I did not ask you that I should have asked you about transferable trust, specifically to financial advisors or not specifically?
Yeah, I think one of the things I talk about in the book, Language of Referrals, is the inner language. I start off with the mindset, our own talking, our self-talk. And a lot of people have a lot of unproductive self-talk or self-language around this. Like asking for referrals is risky. Or if I just serve my clients well enough, I'll get plenty. Now, we do have to serve them well, and that will certainly take care of some, but it's not going to create that exponential growth we're talking about. So first part of the book, I talk about the inner language. So I guess the teaching moment for now is just become aware of your thoughts, your assumptions, the stories you tell yourself around why this can't work or why it hasn't worked for you in the past. because we know it does work. Maybe how you did it didn't work. Maybe how you approached it didn't work, but it does work. So it's a matter of finding the right words, finding the right methodology. So that inner language is also very important.
Yeah. And not only for financial advisors.
Now, I'm holding up a dummy of the book. So now everyone is seeing on their screen two dummies, not you, me and the dummy.
Make it three dummies
if you want. That's up to you. But yeah, and I hope people will get it. I hope people will ask me questions because I love talking about this. I'm very accessible. You know, shoot me an email. What did you like? What didn't you like? What questions do you have? And we'll talk it through.
Yeah. And so how do they learn more about you? How do they reach you? You have other tools that you provide financial advisors. I'm going to provide links in the podcast episode, but how do they learn about you from you?
Sure. Thank you. A lot of free and valuable, I'd say free, but valuable resources. Referralcoach.com/resources, referralcoach.com/resources. And the book itself, Language of Referrals, www.languageofreferrals.com, takes you to the page for the book itself. Initially, we'll take pre-orders, and then when the book is available, you can order it there through Amazon or whatever. So thank you.
And you have howtohandlereferrals.com. You have fearlessreferrals.com, kickstartprospecting.com. So you're like me. We're just buying domains.
You know, I own the domain, Domains Anonymous. I used to own so many domains because I do a lot of redirects, and I want to use domains that are easy for people to remember, which is important marketing message for everybody listening. But I have been purging lately, Yoram. I have been weaning myself off of a lot of those domains that I'm just not going to use, or they're so specific. If I ever need it, no one else is going to be having it. I can go back and get it instead of paying for it.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for being on our show today. Referral is a big part of transferable trust, which is a big part of establishing trust. Thank you for being with me.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, like it, subscribe to this channel, and get informed when I release more episodes like that. And remember, the answer to this question will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can you be trusted?